We love multifamily because it is a hedge against inflation. If you're underwriting it properly with interest rates, then you still have long-term wealth building capabilities, even in a volatile market cycle.
Welcome to the Free From Wall Street podcast, where we share how we have done over $200 million in real estate deals to create, preserve, and pass on generational wealth without the roller coaster ride of the stock market. If you're ready to start investing with purpose, visit freefromwallstreet.com. But for now, let's dive into this episode.
Welcome back to the Free From Wall Street podcast. What up, everybody? Today, we have special guests, Chris Krauser, our new investor success manager, and the often heard but never seen managing partner of Integrity Holdings, Travis, my partner in crime. So I'm excited for this one because all we're going to do is have a conversation between the three of us, and you guys are going to get to be a fly on the wall talking about how we are finding deals, finding partners. Why are we looking at certain markets? How are we underwriting certain deals? I know this is a little granular, so if you guys like the frou-frou stuff, go to another episode. This is going to get a little bit more technical about how we're doing deals and how our investors make returns and how we make money and things like that. Inflationary season, interest rates are moving. Like, there's a lot of things happening in the market that operators, I think, are probably aware of that can really hurt the business long term. And there's easy ways to insulate ourselves from those risks as long as you're underwriting to it properly, right? Everybody says that money is not made on when you sell a deal, but when you buy a deal. So that's why I wanted to have Travis come on. So Travis, as you guys know, does most of the asset management, most of the underwriting to these deals. He's looking every day at new deals from new operators, building the relationships with the sponsors that are getting the deal flow. And then we put it through our checks and balances. And then we invited Chris on too, because Chris is going to ask some of the questions that he's getting from his investors, or that he knows that his investors are going to want to hear the answers to. And yeah, so we're going to spend 10 minutes on this. It's not going to be like a huge deep dive on it, but we're going to give you some of the tops of the waves, is how we're doing deals, why we're doing those deals, why we like them. Maybe we'll even get into a little bit of like what went wrong on some deals in the past, what's going right in some deals right now, because we're exiting two deals right now that are crazy returns. Definitely gotten some lift from the market on that, but also underwrote them well and purchased them well. So anyway, that's my long-winded intro. Thanks for listening. If you're getting value from this, make sure you're liking, you're subscribing, leave us a review so that other people that find it valuable can find us as well. So welcome, Trav, Chris.
Hi.
What up, boys?
Hello.
Living the dream. Once again, it's another day.
So fun stuff that we just got done, process mapping, right? Like so a little bit of brain damage. If you guys don't know what process mapping is, it's where we literally take every process in the business and we put it in a lucid chart and like say this happens and then this happens and then this person is triggered. And so anyway, we do that on a weekly basis. If you're a business owner, you're not doing that. I'm not a detail-oriented guy, but I see so much value in being able to manage to those processes. So anyway, do it.
You don't want to build a house without a blueprint.
Yeah, it's exactly right. And yeah, you've been saying that for years. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs just go at it and go, yeah, we'll figure it out. And like, we've done it that way too. So much easier when you build the blueprint, you can manage to it. And everybody has the same expectations. And then you can hold people accountable to those expectations. So
yeah, I'm not saying that because I knew that starting.
Right. We've learned it over time.
Definitely learned experience.
As we've moved from the owner-operator role, where we were out building the relationships with the brokers, underwriting all the deals, having basically our own acquisitions team focused on that, to now the fund structure, to where we're partnering with seasoned operators that are bringing us deal flow and we're putting it through our funnel, through our models. Let's start at the highest level. How do we choose the sponsors? Like, who are we partnering with? Who's the ideal partner?
Well, we've learned through trial and error that jumping into partnerships with sponsors that don't have the track record or the experience, not that it's a mistake, it just makes things more difficult for us, right? So if we want to scale, how do we do that with somebody that is still kind of building their business?
Right.
So the goal is to find sponsors that are already established. They have their business structured in a way, process oriented, right? It's a machine. So those are the guys that we want to partner with.
They typically have in-house asset and property managers, right? In-house, like yeah. They've built that out themselves. Yes. So I think from the highest level, they have to align with our core values, right?
Like first things first. Yep.
Do we like them? Can we know, like, and trust them? Do they adhere to our core values and who we are? Are they accountable? Are they growth oriented? Are they, you know, integrity focused? And then some of the nuts and bolts, like how long do they have to be in business? How many deals should they have done? How many exits?
Yeah. So 10 years in business is what we want to see. 100 million or 1,000 units under management, whichever is meets that rec. So 5 exits we'd like to see, just because we want to know that they've been through full cycles.
Yeah, we didn't pick these numbers arbitrarily, right? Like we've sat down and come up with these targets based on where our SWOT assessment was, right? So strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. What is the biggest threat to our capital and to our investors' capital? And frankly, I think it's inexperience. I think there's a lot of gurus teaching multifamily from the stage right now that do not have a lot of experience weathering tough market cycles. And without that experience, you're putting investors' money at risk. And that's frankly why we got out of the operator game. And we said, let's hitch our wagon to these guys that have a ton more experience with us to keep our money safe and our investors' money safe.
Amen.
So, you know, these aren't just arbitrary targets. We said, you know, if you're in the business for 10 years, I mean, ideally, right? We want 30 years in the business, 40 years in the business. And there's a lot of those operators that we already do partner with. But it's a weird season, right? Like we talked about at the beginning of the show. Inflation, interest rates. Everybody's talking about a looming recession. There's
unknowns.
A ton of volatility in the stock market, which, you know, there's a lot of things happening. And the best way to mitigate that risk is to have gone through it before. And a lot of these guys that are new to the market, you know, they don't check that box for us because it's just as risky as partnering with somebody that's new to the business.
They got a nice ride so far. So did we. You know, I mean,
absolutely.
We came in at a good spot.
I mean, we're selling 2 deals right now, almost 500 units of total multifamily assets that we're hitting year 5 projections in month 12 in one deal and month 15 in another deal. Now, that makes us feel like geniuses, right? Warren Buffett is famous for saying everybody's a genius in a bull market.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what's happening, right? But we're smart enough to know that it's not always going to be this good. You're not going to get to pro forma numbers in 12 and 14 months that you're supposed to be hitting in 5 years in every deal. So what is the tactical plan to make sure that you're getting there regardless of the season, right? And we love multifamily because it is a hedge against inflation. If you're underwriting it properly with interest rates, then you still have long-term wealth building capabilities, even in a volatile market cycle.
Yes, sir.
So Chris, I'm interested to hear. So now you kind of we talked a little bit about the sponsor aspect of it. What questions do you have or do your investors typically have when they're seeing who we're going after?
So yeah, for those of us that are listening that are not experienced investors in commercial real estate, can you just give a brief description or explanation of what a sponsor is? Is it synonymous with the term operator? And why do we use those sponsors / operators? Why is it so important that we partner with those firms?
Yeah.
Just if you don't mind explaining that, I think, because it was a new term to me when I came over. I had to learn it pretty quickly. Now I understand the value of it, but I want to hear from your voices.
Yep. So in these deals, right, you typically have general partners and limited partners. The limited partners are the passive investors that give us their money and they just kind of get the checks in the mail, right? The general partners are the ones that operate the deal. They do the asset management. Do they do the construction management? They do the property management. They're managing the budgets and the teams that are on site. They're doing lease rentals, turnovers, all those things, right? So we are partners. We're co-GPs with the operators or the sponsors that we partner with. A sponsor is essentially just who sponsors the deal, who's brought the deal, right? Who's going to operate the deal. So yes, I use them synonymously, sponsor and operator. Effectively, those are the people that are running the project, running the day-to-day.
Okay. Yeah, that's helpful because I think obviously you want to partner with somebody, as you guys explained, with somebody that's got tenure, but they're the ones that are bringing the deal to us. And then we put it through our funnel to make sure that all the check marks are checked so that we know it is a good deal. They obviously are like the first line of defense of a new deal, it sounds like to me, right? So they identify this deal, they bring it to us and say, hey, this group is interested in selling. This is why we think it might be good. Go ahead and do your due diligence. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, oftentimes they're bringing us the deal when they already have a letter of intent or contract signed. So they have the control of the deal. Right. So they have acquisitions teams, they have broker relationships, they're getting off-market deal flow directly from owners, and they're doing all that legwork, right? Because that's, you got to kiss a lot of frogs to get a deal under contract. And then they bring us those deals, and then our secondary filter is, okay, now we have 10 deals that we have under contract. What's the best deal for Integrity to do? Right. And then that's where Travis gets involved, where he is basically looking at their underwriting, putting it through our model and seeing if it's real. Because here's what I love about Excel. It tells you all the information you need. Here's what I hate about Excel. It's only as good as the data that's input. Like, just because you're looking at a deal and it tells you that it's an 18% IRR doesn't mean that necessarily that's the rate of return. Right? Are the expense ratios there? Is the income there? Is the rent bumps reasonable? Right? So, Trav, talk to us a little bit about your process. Somebody sends you a deal and says, here's my great deal. I want you guys to fund it. What do you do? How do you go through the process?
So, first thing that we look at, obviously, is the IRR, right? Internal rate of return. We shoot for a minimum of 15% there because our LP side already is at a 12%.
So just so you guys know, IRRs, most of our passive investors don't even get this granular with it, right? They're looking at average annual rates of return. That's what they care about. So for us, though, the internal rate of return is a little bit deeper of a dive than just how much money are we making. It's the cost and time value of money within that deal. So it's a little bit more of a financial term, but you guys don't have to get hung up on it. But that is kind of the first check that we do is like, hey, is it over this minimum metric that we have?
Right, because we need to eat too, right? So our LP, right, our investors need to eat, and then whatever we have left over there is what we get to eat on, right? So typically that's what we're seeing in the market right now is, you know, 15%. But the key is that we need to be able to have a cash on cash return that's going to actually carry that required payment that needs to go to our investors throughout the deal, right? So we need to cover that.
Right.
So that's the first thing we look at.
How is it going to get there? It's got to come from cash.
Yeah. If it makes that cut, right, then we start to dive deeper, right? We look at expenses. We look at rental comps to make sure that, like what Stephen was saying, the comps are reasonable, right? They actually match up to that unit mix, right? Or that vintage of deal, right? Because you can have a deal that is built in 2019, but our subject is 1984, right?
And it's not a good comp.
There's sponsors out there that actually have done that, right? Hey, buddy.
For those of you just listening and not watching the podcast today, Noah just broke into my room somehow, and he is joining us on the podcast. Say hi.
Hey.
All right. Hey. So Captain. Noah is also learning how to underwrite deals. So I want to touch on something that you just said. So you're looking at expenses, and you know, somebody just sent me a deal, and this is offline. They sent me a deal and they just said, hey, I'm looking to potentially take this project down. Can you help me underwrite it? And I said, no, I'm not really the underwriter, but first question, what's the cap rate? Well, the going in cap rate is like 6.5%. I said, wow, that sounds really good.
That's a good deal.
Right? Good deal. And then I said, what's it based on, right? Because it's based on your net operating income. Your net operating income is how you come up with the cap rate. Net operating income is gross income minus expenses, and that's your line item for NOI. So it's fair to say that the cap rate, which is where we decide if it's a good deal, is predicated on the income. Is it real, right? Do you have a rent roll? Can you prove to me that that rent is actually getting taken in on the property? And then two, is the expenses reasonable? So I said to the guy, what's the expense ratio? An expense ratio is simply the ratio between what the expenses are and what the income is. If it's $1 million in income and you have a $500,000 expenses, your expense ratio is 50%. Simple math. You know what he said to me? 7.
That's
he said 7% was the expense ratio.
That's lean.
And I said, I don't even know if the taxes would be 7%.
No.
Right. So what is a typical expense ratio in a large multifamily deal that we're looking at? 30, 40, 50?
I mean, obviously, it depends on a lot of things, right? Vintage, you know, what kind of utility sources there are, but typically 50.
Yeah.
That's what we'll underwrite to.
Yeah. So 50% expense ratio, very reasonable. If we underwrite to that and then we perform on 45% expense ratios,
great.
We're killing it, right? Cool. All right. So I don't want this to get too much longer. So we're going through the acquisition. They come to us. You're doing some underwriting. You're looking at expense ratios. Now we're remodeling the entire thing. Are we looking at the same assumptions that they're giving us, or are we starting from scratch?
As far as what? Cost?
Rental comps, income, like how much of their word do we take for it, I guess is the question.
Versus how much? We trust but verify.
Yeah.
So we'll pull our own comps from CoStar and make sure that it aligns.
Right. So that's important too, right? Because people will come to us and say, hey, the rents are 800. We can achieve 1100. And we're saying, well, what's that based on?
Right.
And they're saying, here's the comps, right? And then Trav goes into CoStar and he finds that they have used the one outlier comp that makes 1100 bucks, but typically the market is showing 950.
Yeah. We don't want to go off top of the market comps, right? You know, I mean, again, it depends on the subject. Is it brand new? Is it 80s vintage, 70s vintage? So it depends what we're looking at, but we're still not going to go off the top end of it, right? So we're going to average it. We're going to try to get hit in the middle to be realistic.
Yeah.
And it also depends on what type of renovations we're doing.
So we're going through construction budgets, like we're going through all this stuff, right? And then we decide, hey, this is a deal we want to do or a deal we don't want to do. So top of the funnel sponsor is the operator, is our partner. Seasoned enough, aligned with our core values. Secondarily, does the deal check our boxes, our minimum requirements for our investor returns and for our corporate returns? Then we go ahead and get involved in the deal, right? And this still is in Travis's lane right now. We also have another couple great team members that do asset management for us, but now we're operating the deal. And to Chris's point before, like, why is it important to have a good operator? Because it all looks good on paper, right? Where the rubber meets the road is how you execute on that plan, that asset management plan to say, this is how I get from $800 to $1,100 rent. So, yeah. So what
that's
does
when
that
the work begins.
Like? That's when the real, that's when the hard work begins.
Yep. Yeah. So we run through monthly with these sponsors, right? So every month, technically every week, we require a report to come through and we review that in-house. And then we meet monthly with the sponsors on each deal to make sure that we're hitting our budget, right? So hopefully we're outpacing our budget, but we always want to be a minimum of 95% of budget. We think that's realistic. Obviously, we want to outpace that, but that's the goal. If we don't hit those numbers, then we have to reevaluate. So every month, every quarter, every year, you know, we're reviewing the budget. And then within 3 months of the end of the year, we're reviewing the budget for the next year. And then we're holding them accountable to what they're giving us.
Doesn't sound very passive.
It's not. It's a lot of work.
Well, and that's the, I think that's part of why I get frustrated with the other guys teaching this stuff from, like, for a limited partner, this is a passive business, right? Because you're basically partnering with us so that we can go out and do all that work. But unless you want to be an active investor, like, you know, this is a very active business. We have to touch, feel every single property every single month, make sure that these budget line items are lining up with what the projections were. One of my favorite numbers in all these reports is pro forma versus actual, because I like to know what we projected and what's actually happening. Now, if those numbers are off, I don't get real bent out of shape about it, right? Because it's not that nothing ever goes wrong in these properties, right? If you're a limited partner and you're a passive investor and you have operators that have told you that nothing has ever gone wrong, run, because it's just not the case, right? I don't want to partner with people that never had problems. I want to know how they deal with those problems.
Yeah. And that's huge, right? That's a big part of it. So if they're just coming and we're identifying the issues and the problems, then that's a red flag. If there's issues and problems and they're coming with solutions, right? And, you know, that's another reason of why we pick our sponsors the way we do, because they're better at this than we are. That's why we're partnering with them. Right. So when they come to us with solutions, we're one, obviously more confident in that sponsors and want to do more deals with them. But two, we're learning as well. So it's a growth period for us to be able to go through these things and learn and be better at what we do.
So what those pro forma versus actual numbers are indicators as to where something's going wrong, right? So if there's a certain threshold that's acceptable and it goes over and above that, then we're saying, hey, let's make sure that we're looking at this hard, right? If lease up was slower than we thought, if construction's taking longer than I thought, or, you know, the water bill was higher than we thought, like all of these line items have to get looked at. And then when there's a flag, we go, oh, this is where we need to pivot. This is where we need to adjust, or we need to look really hard at this.
Yep.
So, all right. So we're killing it. We did the acquisition. We found the sponsor. We got the deal. We're asset managing it to death, right? We got all of our rent bumps up, and now it's time to sell the thing. How's that go?
Before we go further, I want to get clarification on one term that's thrown around a lot in the underwriting process. It's cap rate, right? And so for those of the investors that aren't familiar with that term, why is that? What is that term in simple language, and why is it so important?
So a cap rate is short for capitalization rate, right? It's basically the rate of return on real property based on the net operating income, right? So it's what the rate of return that's expected to be generated over the life cycle of the deal, right?
The value of
it. Yeah, it's simply calculated by dividing a property's net operating income by the current market value. And then that ratio is expressed as a percentage, which is basically an estimation of the investor's potential return on investment.
Right.
So it's just a quick back of the napkin, right? Like if I have $1 million property, it's producing $100,000 net operating income, it's a 10 cap, right?
Yep.
And then per market, you kind of know, you can call a broker and say, hey, what is 150 unit property trading for right now? I'll say, about a 4.5 cap, right? In Jacksonville or Orlando. And, you know, Boise, Idaho, it's probably like a 6 cap, right? So different capitalization rates, different rates of return. It's how you value a property in a particular market.
Right, which rolls into the sale, right? So a sale, I mean, our goal here is to get our net operating income as high as we possibly can, right? Because we're going to take advantage of what the sale cap rate is.
Right.
Right. So we'll take our new net operating income. We started at 100, we got it to 200, right? And then, you know, you could have a market swing, right, to where it either goes up or down. You'd rather it go down because your value will increase, right? So if the market is going the right way, right, you really get a nice swing. So that has a lot to do with if we're going to sell or not. So it's a good point that you brought that up.
Okay.
So
we're going to do a second topic on the sale and disposition and like how that process goes, right? How are we calculating cap rates, exit fees, all that stuff in another episode. Just wanted to give you guys top of the waves structure on how we're looking at deals to get them, right? Let's talk next time, guys, on how we're capitalizing on those deals, why we would even sell, right? If it's cash flowing, why would you sell it? So tune in next time to find out why we would do that, how we're turning capital, how that affects IRR and AAR and all these fun terms that you're trying to learn and that we have learned over the last decade as well. So thank you so much, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks for listening to Free From Wall Street. We'll check you next time. See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Free From Wall Street podcast. If you like what you hear, leave us a rating and review and let us know what you think.